From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media and WBFO, this is What's Next. The Tool Library is a volunteer-powered nonprofit tool lending library located in the center of Buffalo's Main Street. Set up to lend tools out to the community to help them maintain and fix up their homes and gardens. On today's show, we take a tour of the Tool Library with Jay Moran and Darren Cotton, the executive director of the library. Then, Thomas O'Neill White speaks with returning guest Alex Burgos, public health policy and public relations professional.
I kind of see my policy work as a sphere of all the things that need to come together in order to move the needle forward in not only the most effective way, but the most inclusive way.
The two discuss filling the gaps in youth and sports programs on Buffalo's West Side. All this and more on What's Next, but first the news.
This is WBFO. Buffalo police are investigating the overnight shooting death of a 46-year-old man in North Buffalo. Northwest District officers responded just after 1 in the morning to reports of a fight on the patio of a Hurdle Avenue tavern. Detectives say the victim was shot during the altercation and taken to ECMC, where he was later declared deceased. Anyone with information is asked to contact the confidential tip call line at 847-2255. A Jamestown man faces drug-related charges that carry potential penalties of 20 years in prison and a fine of $1 million. According to the U.S. Attorney's Office, 43-year-old Willie Graham was given one dose of Narcan after experiencing chest pains and difficulties breathing during his March 2nd arrest. According to officers, Graham told them he had eaten drugs prior to his arrest and was overdosing. Authorities allege Graham was in possession of suspected fentanyl and methamphetamine. A key political power broker from Washington is in Buffalo today to meet with Buffalo Mayor Byron Brown. Senior White House advisor Tom Perez is scheduled to join the mayor for a tour and review of infrastructure projects. Perez, a graduate of Canisius High School, will also join a session with a Jefferson Avenue streetscape roundtable. Perez previously served as labor secretary under President Barack Obama and chair of the Democratic National Committee. The 14-acre campus that served as a longtime location of Madai University will be the future home to the Buffalo Academy of Science Charter School. After weeks of speculation, officials on Monday announced the sale of the campus to Charter Schools Development Corporation, which will lease the facility to the Buffalo Academy of Science Charter. Established in 2004, the K-12 charter school boasts a 100% college acceptance rate in 2023 and a 93% graduation rate. The school's capital campaign chair says 90% of their Buffalo students are economically disadvantaged and is encouraging community members to support the school's development. Local health advocates are increasing their push to end the sale of menthol cigarettes in the city of Buffalo. To spread its message, the group No Menthol Buffalo is launching a campaign today to highlight the connection between menthol cigarettes and how smoking-related illness is the leading cause of death in the Black community. Advocates are calling on the Buffalo Common Council to ban the sale of menthol cigarettes within city limits. The group cites a study from Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center that asserts a menthol ban would prevent 730 premature deaths in Buffalo and 483 premature deaths among people who are Black. And after 4 years of construction at Canal Side, the Erie Canal boat Seneca Chief is in the water today. The vessel is leaving the long shed at Canal Side and will be transported to the Port of Buffalo and then take a short voyage to the commercial slip, where it will undergo continued construction next year. It will go the length of the Erie Canal and down to New York City to mark the 200th anniversary of the Erie Canal. I'm Jay Moran.
I'm Bridget Jaipal Valenza.
I'm Thomas O'Neill White.
We need to get together and let our voices be heard.
This is What's Next. A dedicated hour to have important conversations about the issues facing the marginalized and underrepresented communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario.
If we're going to have some real healing, we've got to have space to tell some uncomfortable truth.
What's Next continues our mission to discuss race,
equity,
and the common concerns of Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Today on What's Next, we get a firsthand look and tour of the Tool Library. Now, in its current location at 2626 Main Street, The Tool Library has been in Buffalo for over a decade, and its message continues to grow as its membership expands. Their shelves are full of all sorts of items, from as simple as hammers, screwdrivers, and shovels, to as large as rototillers, pressure washers, and jackhammers, to as obscure as folding tables and chairs. The Tool Library holds many imaginative offerings. In all, over 4,800 tools can be loaned to members. Oh, and there are no gas-powered tools at the Tool Library. For Executive Director Darren Cotton, there are goals beyond making sure residents have what they need for household endeavors. He sees the model as a way to improve neighborhoods and imagine a more utopian world. Darren Cotton takes us on a tour of the Tool Library.
So we got our start just about 13 years ago. I was a student at UB, living off campus, having a terrible landlord. I think a lot of people can probably relate to that. Trying to do small odd jobs around the house, but just not really having the tools to do it. And so I was studying urban planning at the time, and so the idea of a tool library was really intriguing to me, not only, you know, for myself as a renter, but like studying community development and thinking about how do neighborhoods, you know, advocate for themselves and kind of tackle issues, quality of life projects, that sort of thing. So Tool Library was a really exciting idea to me. So we got some startup funding from the city, found a small storefront a little bit further down Main Street, and embarked on this grand adventure.
Did you have like a template to follow when you did this, or is this something you kind of grow out of your own imagination and the sense of need here in the city?
So Tool Libraries have been around for probably 6 or 7 decades. So there's kind of a argument about who started the first tool library.
We know it wasn't you.
Right, exactly. But there were other tool libraries out there. And so I stumbled upon a national Google group of just like people who were working in tool libraries, volunteering in tool libraries. And so there was a lot of really great material that was already out there, membership templates, waivers, that sort of thing. So I absolutely wasn't starting from scratch. And I think that just kind of speaks to the movement that everyone just wants to share whatever resources are available, because it's a great idea and it should be in every community. And so however we can support other people trying to start them.
Okay.
So yeah, we started with a few dozen tools, probably had 30 or 40 members our first year. And today we're just over 1,500 active members. We've got about 4,800 items in the inventory. And inventory has really evolved over the years, just based on both community need and then just, you know, really interesting donations we've got. So we got sewing machine.
Sure.
Recently donated. So again, like people hear tools and, you know, this is kind of what comes to mind, but
right.
You know, we've got pop-up canopies, tables, chairs. So for, you know, doing a block party, you know, these things are hundreds of dollars to go out and buy. But if you're just trying to put an event on for one day, it makes sense to come borrow what you need, use it, bring it back, and someone else can do the same thing. Projectors, projector screens. We've got a lot of kind of kitchen things. So pressure canners, dehydrators, popcorn machine.
A popcorn machine.
Yes.
So you said, a sewing machine, you have a sewing machine.
Yep.
Has anybody taken you up on that yet?
I think one person has taken it out, and it was really interesting. It's probably from the 1980s, but one of our volunteers in the shop also volunteers with our Dare to Repair Cafe initiative. So they are specifically focused on fixing sewing machines. So they took it home, kind of gave it a once-over, got it back into really great working condition. And so again, we're just really lucky that we have like such an amazing community of people who have these skills, who are willing to share them, and who are going to keep something, you know, that's 40 years old, hopefully working for another 10, 20 years.
And of course, you guys right here, you're in the University District, but right on the edge of the Parkside District, right? Who is getting involved here? Is it everybody from all over the city, or is it more local people? What is it?
Yeah, so our volunteers come from all over the place. We benefit a lot from proximity to UB, so we still get a lot of students. I've stayed really engaged and connected to UB, and so they've been fantastic partners. We actually started a first-of-its-kind work-study partnership last year, where the Office of Student Engagement basically places students in the Tool Library. We train them as volunteers. They get to meet community members, but they also get paid directly through the university. So it's kind of a win-win situation for that. And then our members are coming from all over Western New York. So we've got 80 different zip codes represented by members. So, you know, we've got people coming from Niagara Falls, Lewiston, Derby, Springville, Colden, Akron. So it's really all over the place. And that's really exciting. You know, when we started, it was really just City of Buffalo. And especially over the pandemic, we got calls from people in like Cattaraugus, Orleans County being like, hey, can I come borrow tools? And it's like, well, we are here to remove barriers. So absolutely, if you can make it here, 100%, you can sign up as a member.
So in terms of the word getting out there, and now that you've talked to a lot of these people that are from these 80 different zip codes, what's been the connection? How are people getting word of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, I think because we have the first 10 years, we were totally volunteer run. So limited capacity to do, you know, concerted marketing efforts. It really was just word of mouth, a neighbor borrowing a rototiller and their neighbor being like, oh, cool, can I borrow that? And it's like, well, if you sign up as a member to the tool library, you can access this and 4,800 other items. So it really just has been like that person to person. This is a great resource. It's available. You know, sign up as a member, support the organization, but then also get access to things that you need.
So you do have a rototiller.
We do, many.
Oh, yeah?
It's one of our most popular tools, especially
is.
As we're headed into spring. So we've got about 10 in the inventory, but there's always a wait list because demand outstrips our ability to make them available.
So the demand is that high for that?
Yeah, so okay. Things like rototillers, pressure washers will be super popular. We've got some really great battery-powered lawnmowers, string trimmers, that sort of thing. So it's really interesting, you know, just to see kind of all the different people coming to the tool library for different reasons. So, you know, you might get a renter whose landlord isn't cutting the lawn and they want to cut the lawn because they don't want to have a jungle for a front yard. Or you'll have a homeowner who just doesn't want to store or own a lawnmower. They'll come in, you know, borrow it on a Friday, bring it back the next day on a Saturday. And they do that like every 2 weeks. And so it is beautiful that the space is, you know, a place for so many different people that are coming at it from, you know, an economic reason, an environmental reason. So it really is like a great gathering space of people coming from all walks of life.
So, and you just mentioned it, but it's worth bringing up. You have the battery operated lawnmowers, I think maybe even have some, they might have cords as well. I'm not sure about that. But no gas operated tools here.
Yeah, so that was kind of twofold, a commitment to the idea of building a more sustainable economy, a sustainable community, but also gas-powered tools take a lot of maintenance, and also storing them can be really dangerous. Like, we don't want to have gasoline on site. But there are some really crazy statistics out there. A lot of municipalities have started to ban things like gas-powered leaf blowers because of just the incredible amount of pollution they spew. So there's the statistic that using a gas-powered leaf blower for an hour is equivalent to a Toyota Camry driving from Denver, Colorado to L.A. So
Come
it's
on.
Just like two-stroke wow. motors are insanely inefficient. And so municipalities have just started to ban them outright. And so, again, like, we want to be a resource where people can come and borrow battery-powered or corded electric items. And maybe it's just for people who are like, I love my gas-powered tools, I don't want to give them up, and introduce them to the idea of, like, battery-powered items have come a long way in the past couple of years.
Yeah, how about those battery-operated lawnmowers? Because actually I'm in the market right now, so maybe you can convince me.
Yeah.
they're getting good reviews.
They get rave reviews. So we transitioned a lot of our lawn and garden equipment to Ego brand. So they've been around for a while. They're kind of new to me, but they have these massive 46 or 56. I can grab.
Oh, yeah. I'll follow.
Very large batteries that last for a very large, long time. So you know, these could last for anywhere from half an hour to 45 minutes, an hour. And again, I think that's what people think about battery powered, like, oh, it's going to run out.
Right.
But for small, especially small, like city parcels, you know, you're going to mow your lawn and probably still have like 75% of the battery left.
And so enough power on the the motors to get everything done through the, like you said, some can become jungles pretty quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. Lawns. And if you let it go for too long, that's where the string trimmer comes in handy. And then you whack down the grass and come back with a lawnmower.
Yeah. Well, show me around here. I've just, like you said, this has really evolved for you. I mean, you look and you just see I'm not even sure what I'm looking at right here, this particular...
Some clamps.
Those are big clamps.
So, yeah, I think the wonderful thing, too, is when we see people, they'll come in for one item and then just stumble upon, like, oh, you know, I could actually use this for this project. And so it is kind of this space of discovery and exploration, and especially with this new space. So where we were up until June of last year was about 1,500 square feet, and this space upstairs in the basement is about 5,000 square feet.
Oh, okay.
So a massive improvement, and just like the ability for people to kind of browse the inventory, see what we have, and again, maybe a stroke of inspiration comes and they're going to tackle that backsplash or whatever.
Right.
But yeah, up front is pretty much all of your basic DIY home improvement items, so drills, circular saws, reciprocating saws, lots of electric plumbing tools, tiling. We try to organize them by category, so things like painting, drywall, plumbing section by the bathroom, ironically enough.
Yeah, that's right.
Slowly building out a selection of car items as well, so jacks, tire inflators, those sorts of things. Even like, you wouldn't think it, but our live traps are very popular.
Sure.
People catching stray cats and bringing them into shelters, that sort of thing. So a little bit of everything. So tool has a very broad definition at the tool library.
Absolutely, absolutely. So how about for you, though? I've become really curious here. You seem to have a great working knowledge of it. Like you said, you were kind of into urban planning. That was your introduction into this. How about your background when it came to tools before you got involved with the tool library?
Yeah, I knew next to nothing about tools.
Yeah,
so
to join the club.
I think that's the beautiful thing about the tool library is that we have people from all like skill levels, confidence levels, and I like to say that I'm kind of a great example of it is just a learning process, like getting comfortable using something, but really having the people and the community to help you build that confidence and show you how to use something, and ideally you can then go on and share that knowledge with someone else. And so that's really the big thing about the tool library too, is that it is a community of people, and that when we have UB students, it's a great opportunity to, like, some of them have never used a shovel or a string trimmer. And so, like,
I can help with the shovel.
Walking them through the basics of tool use is really fun, and it's a great opportunity. And again, like, a lot of times the barrier is, well, I don't have the money to go out and buy that. And with the tool library, it really opens up the possibility of, well, now everyone has access to the same things, regardless of whether you can afford it or not.
We're at the Buffalo Tool Library talking to Darren Cotton this morning on What's Next. So, Darren, how about just the general satisfaction, I guess, from members? And what are they saying? Like you said, you're up to 1,500 members, so obviously there's a certain amount of satisfaction involved. But what about, is there a sense of spirit that comes from people that are involved in the tool library?
Yeah, absolutely. So we started back in 2011, so we're going on our 13th year. Nonprofit work is really hard and really exhausting and sometimes thankless, but the members really do make what we do here worthwhile. You know, someone coming in and saying, I couldn't have done this project if the tool library didn't exist. And so, like, when you hear that, it's kind of like, okay, it totally makes everything worthwhile. Like, this is why we exist. We really want to, you know, democratize access to tools and to knowledge and to people just feeling like they have more agency over their lives and over, you know, the spaces they call home.
So you must be seeing people then who are coming in with a wide array of things that they need to do, whether, you pointed out, there's plumbing. I mean, that's a whole thing to be diving into there for sure. But, I mean, is that what you're finding, that people are coming in and saying, oh, now I have an ability to do this at my place?
Yeah, and sometimes it'll be, you know, a member comes in with an idea of what they want to do but have no idea what they need to do it. So, again, that's where it's really fantastic, where we have volunteers who maybe are retired tradespeople or they just have that skill set, and they're able to walk them through, like, oh, you don't want to use this tool. You know, one of my favorite examples is everyone thinks they need a chainsaw when they have to cut something down, and it's like, chainsaws are very dangerous. Mm-hmm. But a reciprocating saw with a pruning blade is just as useful to take out, you know, the bushes that have been in front of your house for the past 40 years. So really being able to just, like, drop those little pieces of knowledge, and again, coming from someone who knew literally next to nothing about tools, it's just been a process of, like, learning and getting comfortable with things, and then just being able to share that with other people.
So you feel personally comfortable then at this stage to give background to all these tools?
I won't say all 4,800 items. One of the items I'm always like, please don't ask me how to use this, is a router, which seems easy enough to use. I've just never actually used a router. But yeah, I would say probably 80, 90% of the items I either know how to use or as a homeowner, you know, I've had to figure out how to use them. But it is interesting kind of, again, to see like the different stories and the different projects that people are working on. So, you know, over the course of the blizzard the winter before, right, we had a member where all the pipes froze and they had really terrible flooding. So they were able to come to the tool library, get a submersible pump to get rid of the water. We've got air blowers to kind of dry things out. So again, it could be a hobby that you're working on, but it also could be a very real, immediate, like, emergency need that you have, and we just want to be that resource to people.
So it almost sounds to me, because I was checking out online in the inventory of tools that you had, but it almost seems like maybe the best thing to do if you want to become a member or you're interested in becoming a member and you have a project in mind is maybe just to call and see what you have available and see if there's an avenue for help.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, before you go out and drop a couple $100s on something that maybe you're only going to use once or twice, our entire inventory is online. So if you go to thetoollibrary.org, you can search through that by category or just by name of the item. And again, you could search submersible pump or, you know, miter saw and see, number one, do we have it in the inventory? Number two, how many do we have? And number three, is it available to borrow right now?
You know, every time I start thinking about using certain types of power tools, especially saws, I get this little tingling sensation in my fingers that I think I might be losing parts of them. And you mentioned that you guys have a router, you have a reciprocating saw. And I have a project where I want to cut it's the slightest, maybe about a tenth of an inch of metal that I want to cut through. Would a reciprocating do that for me?
If you're trying to do something a little bit more fine like that, I would almost say like a multi-oscillating tool. That'll get you a much finer cut. But that's the beauty of the tool library. Like, maybe the advice that I'm giving is different from Eric, our person who is a expert woodworker, and he's going to recommend something else.
Right.
But yeah, it is just kind of this wealth of knowledge, and we do get a lot of students, but we really love volunteers who have that knowledge base, who are able to walk people through that. So, you know, people who might be retired plumbers or electricians or carpenters, we would just love to have more of that knowledge base at the tool library.
Then the follow-up question is, do you have that oscillating tool here?
We do.
Oh, wow. Sign me up. Very good. Very good. You want to just walk around a little bit more and see what you have? I mean,
it really is absolutely impressive.
And I got to tell you, Darren, it's impressively organized, too. If my garage looked like this, would be great.
That's the idea, is we kind of want to make it feel almost like a hardware store, but okay. Again, that you can just grab what you need off the shelf, and every item is individually cataloged in our system. And so it's just a matter of us checking that out under your account. You've got a week to use the item. You'll bring it back and start the whole process over again. And so where we are right now is all of the lawn and garden equipment. Okay. So again, you'll see everything is either electric or battery powered. One of our new additions, one of my favorites, is the auger.
Wow.
So great for...
That's a battery operated auger?
Yeah.
Wow.
And can be operated with one person. We actually had a service day where we were doing a bunch of bulb plantings out in the pocket park out front of the building, and we had a high schooler from Sacred Heart join us, and this was like her favorite tool. And so I like to say, if a high schooler can man this battery-powered auger, I feel like anyone can.
Wow. I'm not so sure about myself, but that's not. And what do we have over here? What am I looking at for this massive?
This is a jackhammer.
That's a jackhammer? It's not battery operated.
Corded electric. And we've got a handful of items that we call super tools. So those usually cost us anywhere from $500 to $1,000 to put into the inventory. So those, in addition to if you were to sign up at the $30 or $75 level, that's for the whole year. These come with a $20 borrowing fee every day. But again, that just helps us maintain the tools. It helps us generate a little bit more revenue to repair items and then also go out and potentially purchase some as well.
So that does make sense. Of course, maintenance has to be a big part of it. So people bring these tools back. Obviously expected to be at least somewhat maintained or cleaned before they get here?
Yeah, so there's a whole host of borrowing rules that members sign off on when they sign up as members. The idea is, you know, you're not doing it for us, you're doing it for the next member who's going to take that item out. So there is a sense of like duty and obligation to, you know, leave it at least as well maintained as you found it. So things like cleaning fees, we do have late fees, but again, it is more so a community. We're not trying to be punitive. We just want people to respect the service, and overwhelmingly people do, almost to a fault sometimes. Like, we've had instances where we were running a wait list on an air compressor. So we had no air compressors. A member really needed one. They went out and bought it, and then when they were done with their project, they ended up just donating it to us.
Wow.
We've had items come back where like a wheel was broken on the specific item, and then the member actually went out and bought like new higher quality wheels, installed them, and now like this tool has been improved for the next person. So it is just kind of this idea of like reciprocity and paying it forward, and like, let's take care of these things so that we all have access to them.
And of course, like you said, so some of these tools then do need a certain type of maintenance. Do you generally have the ability among your group of members and volunteers that can maintain these things?
Yep. So in addition to volunteers just kind of staffing the storefront, we do have a handful of folks who are just super handy. They'll come in, you know, once a month or once a week. And we've got a little repair station in the back where we'll ticket items and say, you know, XYZ is wrong with this. So they'll go through, tinker with it, figure out what's wrong, have us order parts, and then just kind of keep things rolling like that. And then for items where it's just kind of beyond our ability, we work with some of the local repair shops as well, just to kind of send those out and get those back.
So we're here in the gardening section. I assume then that the lot has already been checked out during the spring here so far?
Yes, I was going to say it's much easier to walk here. Typically, there is more of like you've kind of got to squeeze through, but we probably have about 5 or 6 lawnmowers out right now. Again, we have probably close to 10 rototillers. We've got one left.
Wow.
Things like edgers, string trimmers.
Wow. Okay, I see this. And, you know, it's interesting because you know, it's some high-tech stuff, and I see even low-tech is a couple of push brooms over there as well. Yeah.
Yep, exactly. Uh-huh. And then you'll see, like, oh, wow, holy trash pickers.
Yes.
So, again, one of the things, membership is not just open to individuals. We have tons of organizations that sign up as members as well. So block clubs, neighborhood groups, other nonprofits. So that's really exciting, too, because, again, all of these organizations don't have to go out and buy all these things, store them. They come to the tool library. They have access to what they need. They use it on their project. They bring it back. And then, you know, we'll probably see them again in 4 months for their next project.
And I'm just looking right here at these, what do they call them?
Trash grabbers, trash pickers.
Trash grabbers, right? I mean, right, I'm seeing probably like 25 just sitting right here. You have more than that?
Yeah, we probably have close to 100. So literally all of these will be out with organizations or just individuals that are trying to organize their own cleanups.
Okay.
And that was one of the things that really inspired me with the tool library too, is like, yes, as an individual renter or homeowner, how can we use these tools? But like, how can we as communities like use these tools on projects that matter to us? So in addition to the tool lending library, we have service days that we organize ourselves. So every spring and every fall, we'll work with community partners to do large-scale tree plantings. We work in a number of community gardens, so building raised beds. And again, it's just like, we've got all these tools. How do we bring them out and kind of put them to work in the community on projects that matter to people?
And then I look over your shoulder here and I see something that's really intriguing. There's a bunch of ladders here. And again, this is one of those things, if you're a homeowner or apartment dweller, a ladder comes in handy, but not everybody has the ladders that they need. But it looks like you've got quite the variety.
Just about everything people would need, from, you know, a 25-foot extension to these little giant sort of foldable ladders, great for stairwells. And that's the thing too, right? Like, who has room to store ladders? We ourselves still kind of struggle with how do we store ladders. But that's one of the beauties too of the tool library, is like always reinventing how we're storing things, displaying things, like making these more accessible and using the space as efficiently as possible.
So people, do they come in here and just start browsing a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So it kind of works both ways. They'll come to a volunteer and say, you know, I've got my shopping list here, XYZ, I need these things. Or they'll just kind of like, my favorite is when people just get super giddy and like they've got a big smile on their face and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe that I could literally use all 4,800 of these items. And it's just like, I think for them, you know, the wheels are turning in their head with like, what project do I want to work on first?
Right. Now I see up here we have stacked up some pieces of wood, lumber, what are we looking at there?
Sure. So interesting kind of tidbit on this building. As you can see, we've got this massive bank vault behind us. So this was built originally as a bank.
Okay.
I believe it was a Liberty Bank. But in the vault, there were all of these shelves where they stored the money. And we're pretty sure the wood was cedar, so like really high quality wood. Huh. So our operations manager, Alyssa, who is also a carpenter, basically deconstructed those. And now we have that wood to use for, you know, we're thinking about building planters for outside benches. Again, cedar is a great like rot resistant, pest resistant wood. So it was kind of just like a little gift from the history of the building as a bank.
Do you own or lease this building?
So when we moved in June, it was a year lease with an option to purchase.
Okay.
And so we are getting ready to exercise that option.
Oh.
So for 13 years, we've been renters and we are really excited to kind of plant roots and have a home base that we know will always be here. And that ideally that the tool library can live on in perpetuity and continue to provide this service and these tools to people that need them.
What else do you want to, you know, other things you want to show me?
Yeah, so back here, this is kind of where everything gets maintained, repaired. So everything gets a tag and then we just kind of wait for our volunteer fixers. And one of the things we do, obviously we have to maintain our own inventory, but we do put on monthly Dare to Repair cafes where we've got a team of anywhere from 10 to 20 people who are super good at fixing stuff. And that could be, you know, your grandma's favorite lamp. It could be a food processor from the 80s. We have a number of seamstresses that come with their sewing machine. So if you've got a shirt or pants with holes, they're happy to mend those. So again, just people with these skills willing to share them with the community. We invite people to bring in their broken items, and it's not just a drop it off and get it fixed. It's a you sit with this person, you learn what they're doing, and ideally you're picking up a few of those skills. We've had people come back to events saying, oh, you know, I got my lamp fixed here, and then I learned what they were doing and I went back and had the confidence to like tackle this other lamp that I had. So again, it's kind of this idea of like, how do we build those skills and how do we create these networks of people who are learning and sharing and really just building that capacity for community members to take care of themselves.
And then when it comes to those repair cafes, is it again somewhat like exploring the inventory here and the idea like call, inquire, see what's possible? Or just come on and give it a shot.
So we have some guidance. So again, no gas-powered items. We're always in an indoor space. So we bounce around to different areas of the region. So it could be library, a school, a community center. But we have guidance on like, you know, small appliances, electronics. We can't really do TVs. They tend to be too specialized. Clothing, textiles, bikes. But yeah, if you ever have a question, you can feel free to email us, call us, stop into the shop. But it is really one of those things of like, I'm sure one of our fixers will attempt to try to fix your item.
Have you become one of the fixers now?
No, I'm the person running around taking pictures for social media and checking people in and out. But I have gotten really into sharpening tools just with like a little hand file. So if I had to, I feel like that would probably be something that I could offer. But we have volunteers who don't know anything about fixing things, but, you know, help people check in, kind of get them situated with their fixers, help us set up, help us break down. They'll bring refreshments. So again, it's a Dare to Repair cafe. So we want food and refreshments for our volunteers and our attendees. So again, just a really beautiful like community event, and people leave happy because for a brief moment in time, it feels like the rules of the world cease to exist and we're just there to help one another. And it's just a great time. I highly recommend it.
You know, now I'd like to maybe expand this into some more general conversation, but you know, like you said, this kind of situation, it's like when you're talking about it, it almost sounds like it's got a little bit of a utopian kind of a thought to it. I mean, maybe that's overdoing it, but when it comes to, but it's the idea that people are really chipping in on a lot of different levels, whether it's, you know, your members, your volunteers, and everybody looking to find solutions to simple problems, but problems that can make a big difference for somebody. I mean, is that kind of what's going on here a little bit?
Yeah, honestly, I recently came across a quote that just like really resonated with me. And it was something to the effect of, you know, any map of the future that doesn't have utopia on it isn't a map worth working towards. And I thought that was like really beautifully succinct and kind of capturing what the goal is here at the Tool Library, you know, showing that there is a different way of doing things and it's very small scale and it's very community based. And I think when we think about climate change and just just like global inequality, they just feel so overwhelming. And it's like, what can we as individuals do? But there are very small scale things where it's like, instead of chucking this broken thing that you have in the garbage, you can come to a community repair cafe, you can get it fixed. So you're saving money, but you're also meeting someone that you never would have met otherwise. You're learning skills, and ideally you're passing that on to someone else. So to me, it makes people, I think, realize that we all have a role to play in sort of building these different systems and different ways of doing things. And again, that's like one of the things that keeps me passionate and motivated, is that, yeah, the world can be completely different from the world that we were born into and that we inherited. And sometimes all it takes is just a handful of people willing to put in the work. And we're just so lucky that we have so many people that I think kind of that vision resonates with them. And little by little, I think we're converting more people. And so hopefully that message resonates with your listeners as well. The more hands we have, the more we can do.
Converting the world one tool at a time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Darren, we kind of set up shop here near the ladders and everything like that, but are there parts that you want to show me before we conclude our visit here this morning?
So if we don't mind taking a dive down into the basement.
We can give it a try.
We have a 3D printer set up down there that I just want to kind of speak to.
Wow, sure.
What we're hoping to do with that. So we had the Erie County Department of Environment and Planning reach out. They had some funding available and wondered if we'd be interested in having a 3D printer on site.
If I may, I just want to point out, we have folding tables here too, which must come in, and folding chairs. They have to come incredibly handy.
Very popular. But yeah, so the county said, hey, we've got some funding. Would you be interested in having a 3D printer on site? And we said, yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons why is because we have lots of parts like this, which is a handle from one of our electric rototillers that consistently break. It's just like a weak point in the manufacturing. And we reached out to the manufacturer and they were basically like, oh no, we don't sell those as replacement parts. So you basically have to go out and buy a whole nother unit.
Thanks.
And
for
it's
literally 5 cent piece of plastic.
Yeah, a 5 cent piece of plastic. And so we were like, well, if we had a 3D printer, we could print our own replacement parts in house. So one of our incredible UB interns, Jason, basically took all the measurements from the original handle and was able to print out a replacement handle that is not only engineered better and will last longer, but will allow us to use these rototillers, hopefully, you know, indefinitely.
So I don't want to speak for you. So it's probably not an idea to say, hey, you know, I just broke a plastic handle in my house. And you don't really want people to call you and say.
We're not there yet, but that's kind of the utopian vision, right, that we're working towards.
I'm curious about your thoughts about the city of Buffalo as a whole moving forward. You know, we talk about utopia and, you know, the possibilities ahead. There's a lot more to come for the city of Buffalo and maybe really great things to come as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think a lot of what I have seen since my time moving into Buffalo has been like this community-led change of organizations on the west side and the east side, really just taking the lead and setting and creating the vision for their own community. And that's, I think, what we need more of. And I think, again, how does Buffalo not fall into the same trap of other cities that are experiencing, you know, rapid gentrification and displacement and these neighborhoods that are no longer affordable to people? And so I think there's a lot of work to do on that, but I think there are so many organizations engaged in the work that needs to be done that I'm really hopeful, and there's nowhere in the world I would rather be than in Buffalo.
Darren Cotton, thanks for joining us on What's Next.
Thanks so much for being here.
Stay with us. There's more to come. This is What's Next on WBFO.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the WBFO app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@wbfo.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is WBFO, your NPR station.
This is What's Next. I'm host Thomas O'Neill White, and I want to welcome back Alex Burgos to the show. Alex is a public health
policy and public relations professional. You know, we ran into each other about a month ago at a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. Shout out to Therese and Audrey and everyone at the Elmwood Village Association. You had mentioned wanting to come back on the show.
Yeah.
Now you're here.
I sure am.
And you've been working on more than a few things.
Yeah.
But at the top of that list is filling the gaps in youth and sports programs on Buffalo's West Side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, thank you again for having me back, first and foremost. It's been about a year since I've been back, and, you know, the work has continued, and my work has evolved in a multitude of ways. And as I continue to grow, not only in my line of work and in my community engagement, I've identified more needs in speaking with stakeholders and continue to collaborate with community partners like the Bell Center, who are an amazing and tremendous resource and, quite frankly, a lifeline on Buffalo's Lower West Side. There is a lot more work to do. And I think that the opportunities that we set up for our youth to be successful, the opportunities we present for them to engage in different activities, and the investment that we deliver to our neighborhood really sets the precedent and the tone of what kind of city we're going to create going forward for the next generation to come.
Yeah, and it's important to having active kids. Mm-hmm. How were you alerted to this issue of gaps within youth programs and sports programs? And what does this problem stem from?
Well, there's a few different things that my advocacy work in that area stems from. Mm-hmm. I used to do youth programming, and right. I still do community programming year-round at this point on a monthly basis, sometimes even more. And I saw the way that oftentimes inner-city programs were underfunded, particularly as it served West and East Side communities. And it's something that's always been in the back of my mind. And in doing policy work towards health equity and addressing a multitude of needs in these communities on the Lower West Side and the Grant West Ferry area and so forth, I've understood that health equity goes beyond just the policy. It goes beyond just the actual health resources that we offer to our communities. It stems into overall wellness. It stems mm-hmm. into opportunity. It delves into areas like housing, but it also delves into things like youth programming. And if you look at census blocks and neighborhoods on the West Side, the Lower West Side community is a neighborhood, according to the U.S. Census, that has the highest concentration of poverty in the entire city.
Wow.
The fourth is the Upper West Side, not too far away from it. And oftentimes, if we're going to redefine and change a community and build up people in a community that have oftentimes been long disenfranchised and under-resourced, we've got to start pulling in funding and delivering and creating programs within said community to address just some of their needs. Now, that's only the tip of the iceberg. Mm-hmm. So I've, you know, been working with the Bell Center for a long time now. They've been a really great community partner of mine. I've done a number of things with them, such as bringing vaccine clinics there, hosting job fairs, you know, doing community programs and panels there. And part of it is my way of pouring back into a community that has poured back into us for so long.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I reached out to the Buffalo Sabres and we're having some extensive conversations about what investment in our community looks like, right? What it looks like on the West Side for the various diverse communities that we serve.
What might that look like?
Well, you know, we've had a series of long conversations, particularly focusing for now on the Hispanic community on the West Side in particular, and we've grouped together a number of stakeholders and organizations like the Hispanic Women's League, El Bata, the Hispanic Heritage Council, and a number of other organizations. And we've had stakeholders meetings to discuss what a long-term collaborative partnership looks like, not only between the organizations themselves, but the community,
mm-hmm.
right? And we're making a lot of really great progress. We have a viewing party at the Pucho Olivencia Community Center coming up. And, you know, one of the first things that we are talking about as an initiative is starting something like a youth sports program on the Lower West Side, most likely being held at the Bell Center. And a lot of that, what we came to the conclusion that that was a good starting point is not only data-driven, but is community-informed. If we look at the data, on average, when we're looking at sports equity in youth and youth programming, youth who come from underserved communities, on average, only have exposure and the opportunities to play two sports, those sports being basketball and football.
Right.
And if you go outside to more affluent communities, the average number is six sports.
Wow.
Now, that's the average number.
Yes.
That's a combination of the low end and the high end. In our community, that's the average of the low end and the high end. And that average is two. So if you're looking at it, in many communities, there may be one sport or one program or one initiative that our youth have the opportunity to be part of. And in some cases, there may be none at all.
And so, and it goes beyond sports as well. Just, I mean, we could be talking like art classes. We could be talking like theater. Mm-hmm. We could be talking all of these different things. And we're not talking in-school activities. We are talking extracurricular activities outside of the school system. Talking about the Bell Center Youth Hockey Program and just developing these ties is kind of what you do on a state level,
yes.
Correct? That's right. With policy and advisory work geared towards health and public safety. I wanted to really quickly circle back to to something that you said off air about the talent in the black and brown communities in Buffalo. What was the quote? That there's a number of talent?
There's an infinite amount of talent in our communities.
Yes.
It's, you know, and I see it. I live on the West Side. I know the families there. We have so much talent, but we don't have enough opportunity or access. That's the fine line.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when you're looking at a community as diverse as the West Side, when you're looking between several factions of different neighborhoods, you're walking this fine line of having folks who have a lot of access and those who don't, sometimes living on the same block. And so the responsibility collectively as people, you know, that I work towards every day is how do we not only bring visibility and opportunity and access for those folks who have less access than us, but how do we get them to where they want to be? And how do we get them to where they need to be? Right? That's just as crucial. And in order to do that, you not only have to be data informed, policy informed, you have to be community informed. You have to get their input. You have to bring their voices to the table. And so oftentimes, when I'm doing policy work at the state level, I'm not doing it by myself because no one person has all of the answers. And I think the best way to create the best policy at the state level, at the local level, or wherever you're advocating is to not only get access to those rooms, but when you have the door open up, leave that door open, right?
Yes.
Bring those who are, you know, experiencing said disparity that you're trying to address. Bring those who are working at organizations or organizers who are experts in that field and are working to address said issues of whatever it is that you're trying to address, whether it be health equity, public safety, and so forth. And so I kind of see my policy work as a sphere of all the things that need to come together in order to move the needle forward in not only the most effective way, but the most inclusive way.
Okay. What keeps you grounded in your work? I mean, do you ever sleep?
I get that question all the time. You know, I do sleep. I'll confirm that on air. I won't say it's with both eyes, but I do. but, you know, this is my passion. This is, I mean, the guiding force behind everything I do is the community that I live in, the community that I serve. But I think that in life, if you've ever been down, there's so much value in getting a helping hand, right? And I myself, in my personal life, I've been down many times, right? I've experienced a lot of the same things as the people that I'm serving. And so I want the outcomes for my community to be different overall. You know, and I myself, to get to the point that I'm at today, I've had to defy every odd. I've had to beat every statistic. And I don't think that my community should have to go through the hurdles that I've experienced.
That's a good point. You're already in the community, but you can go from neighborhood to neighborhood and say, you know, I'm where I am because of this community. Mm-hmm. And I am more than what others, outsiders, may think of the mm-hmm. community.
Yes.
Health equity and public safety go hand in hand.
They sure do.
Can you be specific on that?
Well, I've worked, you know, in the realm of health equity and public safety for quite some time in working with stakeholders and policymakers to reimagine what that looks like in our region. You know, when COVID came out, I had served on a number of task force and in collaboration with different community organizations to do things like PPE mm-hmm. distribution, to do things like community outreach, to do things to make sure that applications and forms were language accessible to folks whose English was not their first language. And that continued as well during the outbreak of monkeypox, when I served on a task force under the health commissioner, and we did that same work directed towards monkeypox in championing for things like language access during the process, getting vaccine clinics rolled out on the east and west side of Buffalo.
Critically important.
Yes, you know, and continuing to not only advise but influence policy to make sure that these rollouts were as effective as possible, but also as culturally responsive as possible. During the Mpox vaccine rollout, at the height of it, I actually also got to do an interview and speak with Dr. Peter Hotez, who at the time was a White House correspondent for the Mpox outbreak, and he was also a nominee for the Nobel Peace Prize.
Wow.
So I've taken guidance not only from the community, but also from folks who are working all the way at the federal level to effectively deliver right here back at home.
That's very impressive. How supportive are the politicians and business leaders you meet with on this topic? You mentioned that you come in, but you're not coming alone. You're not coming alone to these conversations. You've got a seat at the table for yourself, but you are creating seats for the people in your community.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And you know, I'll take one example is last summer we had met with Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado on the west side on Niagara and Hudson, you know, to talk about the needs of the community and ways that we can get to where we need to go as a community and continue to partner as stewards of the community in partnership with his office. And in that conversation, you know, I include community partners I've worked with. I include folks who work in the legal realm, folks who work in social work. And in many of the other conversations that I have with our state agencies or elected officials, I'm always making sure that I'm bringing more voices. I live by this motto that when a door opens for you, you got to leave it open for others. Mm-hmm. And I was recently told in a Facebook comment, and I'm going to change my quote now because of that, that when the door opens for you, you got to kick that door so a door isn't there anymore.
Ah, I like that.
So, you know, I think at the end of the day, the message comes down to making sure that we have a diverse slew of perspectives that are incorporated at policy levels, at decision-making tables, so we can effectively serve a number of diverse communities.
What do you love about your community? What do you love about your West Side community? What do you love about the city of Buffalo?
I could write a book about that.
You should. Think about it.
You know, the West Side, it's where so many of my childhood memories are. Mm-hmm. You know, between being the same little boy that was at my father's shop on Niagara and Hudson to being the same little boy that was at the after-school program and the summer program at Westside Community Services to visiting family that lived all over the community to many of my friends living in the community to going to restaurants in the community, that all of my experiences there shape who I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And I am built. I'm proud to be a product of said community. I'm proud to be a product of the Buffalo Public School System. I'm proud to be the product of a blue-collar, middle-class family you know, of a father who was a small business owner and a U.S. Army veteran, and a mother who was a BPS teacher teaching bilingual special needs students in the Buffalo Public School System. Wow. And so my life and my upbringing are the very driving force of the work that I went into. It was formulative of the purpose that I have and the work that I can deliver on behalf of a community that I see as an honor to serve. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I could go on and on about my love for the West Side and seeing, you know, how even more diverse it's becoming and how more diverse it continues to become over the years and change. Seeing
it's the driving force in the population rise.
Yes.
The city of Buffalo. Amazing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I think that the West Side in particular is not only representative of the entire population in the city, you know, under the three major planning neighborhoods in the West Side, I think it's representative of, quite frankly, the population of, you could argue, the whole country.
Right on. That's very well put. Yes. Yes. The diversity on the West Side is really something to behold, and you're really not going to find it anywhere else in the city, in this region.
Yeah.
I wanted to circle back. Where do you see this partnership with the Sabres going? Like, where would you like to see it 5 years from now?
I think, you know, I have a lot of community partnerships with different organizations and stakeholders, and I'd like at some point to bring many of them together, mm-hmm. Into one room where we can reimagine and redefine the future of the West Side collectively, to get private sector buy-in, to get nonprofit buy-in, to get, you know, foundational buy-in, bringing our community stakeholders together to not only address a multitude of needs that we can only address by being in the same space together on a unified agenda, but really moving the needle forward for the entire community. So I continue to partner with them alongside a number of partners individually, but it is my aspiration to bring them all together and collectively be unified for my vision for the community.
Now, I've talked to a lot of stakeholders over the last 5 years, and I want your opinion on this. Are we at a point in the city of Buffalo where a lot more people are stakeholders, community leaders, politicians, we are becoming unsiloed? It's not these groups here or over here,
right,
or over here saying, mm-hmm. we're doing this and we need this. There's a lot more collaboration,
yes,
between organizations and stakeholders in the mm-hmm. city. You agree with that?
I do. And, you know, I work with a pretty wide network of folks, not only throughout other parts of the city, but other parts of the county and, quite frankly, the state. And I think that something that's revolutionized that is social media.
Right.
It is the digital age,
mm-hmm.
you know, and what came of COVID was the implementation of remote work, Zoom becoming the standard and normal. I mean, before the pandemic, I knew very few people that knew how to do Zoom. Mm-hmm. Everyone just had meetings in person.
Right.
And so now, you know, with different stakeholders, even on the state level, I now can meet more frequently because this is the norm. Before, it would be, hey, you know, I'm going to Albany, let's coordinate a meeting. Or, hey, I'm coming to Buffalo, can you give me a tour? Or can mm-hmm. we meet and talk, you know, about ways we can work together? And I feel over the past few years, things have become much more streamlined. You know, you're seeing groups who have entirely different missions working together. You're seeing people of entirely different backgrounds working together. And I'm proud to be a steward of that changing tide in the city.
Pulling those resources together is only going to benefit, in my opinion, the city overall.
Yes.
So do you think you will continue in the advocacy realm for the next few years, or will you take another route? I know you had mentioned off air that, you know, it's all about timing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that however this evolves, I'm going to continue to do this work because
right.
this is who I am. This is my life force. I mean, it's the community that I serve every single day. And, you know, that however that evolves or shifts, the work's going to continue to get done. So I'm really excited for what the future holds and to see how this work continues to evolve and, you know, the role that I take going forward in moving our community forward.
You're listening to What's Next. I want to thank my guest, public health policy and public relations professional, Alex Burgos. This is WBFO News from Buffalo, Toronto Public Media.